Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
Hey bosses, this is Johnny and welcome to episode 94 of the Invest Like a Boss podcast. I am in Plovdiv, Bulgaria, and Sam is in a place just as weird. Where are you, Sam?
I am saying hello from Santa Marta, Colombia. Buenos dias, Johnny.
Two places I would almost guarantee none of you listeners have been to.
Yes, it's good to discover some new places. Even in, what are we in, second world or third world countries right now?
This one's definitely a third world country. I'm sure the Bulgarians wouldn't want to admit to that. But no, it's it used to be part of the Eastern Bloc, you know, kind of old USSR times. But it's actually pretty nice. It's a nice country. What about you?
Yeah. I mean, Colombia. You'll hear on this episode we went through some wild places. I mean, I know a lot of the listeners are familiar with the big cities here. Some of the places we went on this last journey were crazy. We just got finished coming back, talking about that a little bit on the outro, but basically we hired a car and drove the entire north coast looking for wind to go kite surfing. And it's been an absolute adventure. Loved every moment of it. And we'll talk about it more in upcoming episodes, and of course on this episode.
Yeah, and actually what you and Zach did in Colombia kind of reminds me of what Richard Branson probably does with his buddies. You know, this episode's all about financial freedom and why we invest our money and what it gives us. But that's kind of just what I imagine Mr. Branson doing when he was young, with a lot of money, just saying, hey, let's hop in a car, let's explore, let's see what's fun.
Yeah, and Zach and I were talking about this. You know, as you get older, you seemingly take less risks and are a little bit less adventurous. I'm not sure the real reason for that, but I think a lot of it is just because your friends are not doing as much adventure. And, you know, when you're 20, 25 years old, you're running on adrenaline and stupidity a lot of the times. But this was one of those trips that was like, yeah, I was uncomfortable for a good portion of it going in both directions. But then when you get done with it, you're like, wow, that was, we got to do so much more of that because it just makes you feel alive.
Yeah, I definitely think that also as we get older, you know, we have more to lose. So we're a bit more scared. But also, I think we start overanalyzing the potential downsides of things and we forget about the intangible upsides, like just the sense of adventure, the excitement of being able to look back and be like, oh, wow, that was actually pretty cool, you know, versus pretty much everything in the world. If you really calculate, you know, the downsides of doing anything, you would just sit on the couch all day. You would just never leave.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a really good point. Well, Zach's the type of guy that, you know, I would say the two of you have been the biggest inspiration on me over the last couple of years in terms of lifestyle and just your general attitudes about life. You know, Johnny, like when I met you, you and I both, we can be hotheads, got a little bit of tempers, but over the last couple of years, you've really seemed to mellow out and live a lot more stress-free. In Spanish here, we'd say, muy contento, muy contento. And Zach is the exact same. Like Zach, you know, we'll talk on this episode, had a very big exit. It was significant, nine figures. Ecom counters out there, that's several hundred million dollars, industry leading company. He's a pretty private guy, so we're not going to talk too much detail about the company or money on this episode. But you know, he was the type of guy that he had his exit, he proved what he wanted to do in the business world, and he put it all behind. And since then, he's basically a retired guy in his mid-30s, and he's loving every single minute of life. And I think that's actually inspiring in some ways. I know people that have not achieved that level of success would be like, of course, that's what happens when you have that level of success. But it's not, because money can control you and can consume you and start running your life versus, you know, you using it to enjoy your own life. So I wanted to talk to Zach on this episode about what financial freedom means to him and what happens when we get successful. What do? What's the perfect life setup? I think that's a really fun question for us to all ponder over.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm really glad that you have access to you know, these big bosses who have these $100 million plus exits, because this is what a lot of us, you know, listen to the show, including myself, dream about or aspire to, and say, okay, if that happens, you know, if we get to that point, what will life be like and will it automatically make us happy? And I think the short answer is no, because there are plenty of rich, you know, middle-aged guys out there or gals that had a big exit or, you know, made a lot of money that are not happy or not enjoying life. So I think it's something to really think about. And, you know, the fact that you're able to give us access to guys like Zach, it's, you know, really something that I never thought would be possible. You know, growing up, I never knew anyone who had $1 million. You know, I never knew a millionaire. So this is going to be really good to hear about this. And after the interview in our outro, you and I know we're going to be talking about what financial freedom means to us, and how we manage that at, you know, the two levels we're at. So I think there's going to be something in this episode for everyone, but I think it's just going to be fun hearing from someone who has that much money and, you know, to find out what he does with his life.
Let's get into it, Johnny. Catch you in the outro, buddy.
All right. Enjoy this episode, guys.
Good road trip, buddy. Cheers to that.
Cheers. So we're sitting here in, how do you pronounce this place again?
I don't know exactly, but it's Rio Hacha.
Rio Hacha. So I know a lot of our listeners will be familiar with Colombia, but they probably aren't familiar with Rio Hacha, and neither were Zach and I until a couple of days ago when we started planning this road trip. So we rented a car in Cartagena and hit the road today. What do you think?
Yeah.
How was it?
I mean, it was a 6-hour drive from Cartagena up to Rio Hacha and went through all sorts of different places, little city, little traffic, little mountain terrain, and probably the poorest like village shack setup I've ever seen. I think Sam is in the same boat here with that, and we've been to some weird places. So
yeah, it got pretty sketch. So like anyone who's been to Medellin or Bogota, I mean, you have good parts, you have bad parts, but where we went today on this trip was like, it's hard to describe, but it is extremely poor. Like I didn't know there was parts like that of Colombia, and we were getting further and further to the north. And we thought it was just going to continue to get worse and worse. And at one point, Zach's like...
the midway of the trip.
Yeah.
And we're going through this city, and it's like fishing village, salt flats, and there's just garbage everywhere. And all the buildings are just shacks, you know, like driftwood bolted together. And, you know, it was about lunchtime, too. So we're looking to stop, find a restaurant for lunch, and, you know, good old trusty Google Maps is telling us where to go, and I'm driving, Sam's navigating, and so Sam's like, all right, we cross the train tracks here, and then you take a left, and we're on a paved road, but we get over the train tracks, and the left is just this dirt road to nowhere, and we're both just like, nope,
not doing it.
not going there.
Oh, well, it's quite a road to get out here. And at one point, Zach looked at me and goes, I can't believe you invited me to Colombia. This is your first time here.
Yeah, like talked me into it.
Yeah. It's a beautiful country. I'm starting to think that there's places that are, you know, if you take a country like Colombia, nomads love it. Obviously, it's cool, but I mean, compared to a place like Spain, I just think like a country like Spain will win in pretty much every department.
Yeah,
but
yeah, definitely. Although I got to say, once we got past that area, it really got nice once we got into the mountains, and like Rio Hacha seems like a pretty cool little sea town. So
yeah, so we'll basically it's Monday. We're gonna do some kite surfing. So you've been kite surfing for
The reason for heading up north, kind of off the beaten path, is the very northern tip of Colombia, one of the like consistently windiest places in the Caribbean. So worth a trip up here to hit up like the desert and see what sort of kite surfing we can find that's not going to be crowded with a bunch of people.
So I'm looking forward to it. So one of the things that we wanted to talk about today was just like, basically, you know, we always talk about investing, but there's three kind of ways that I see people being able to invest. people traditionally think of investing with money, but really it's, you have three things. You have knowledge that you can invest, you have time, and then you have capital. And most people, when they start, they don't have money, so they're investing time and knowledge. And yourself, Johnny, and I have all become successful not through investing capital, but through investing
time and knowledge.
Time and knowledge, right? And I think that's like the most important point for listeners to get through their head, is that just because they don't have any money to invest, you're still investing. You know, you need to invest time and knowledge to get to the next level. So I think that our companies exited about the same time. How long, like after you made your exit, did it take to kind of get your head around the new lifestyle? Like how that money was going to affect you and how,
that's
like...
That's a good question. I would say it took me probably 2 or 3 years for it to really click and be like, oh, wait, you know, I can actually go spend money and not have to just really worry about it.
Right.
Like, you know, I think the one for me was realizing, hey, it's... makes sense to fly business class instead of trying to like save every last penny on like an economy class, and then realizing how much that's enjoyable and realizing, hey, I put all this work in to be successful and to make money so that I could have a lifestyle that I want to live. And also I think one of the things too, where, you know, I came from like a middle class background, worked my way up.
Yeah.
Is once you've made your money, you know, getting used to having it and getting used to managing it and making sure that, like, hey, okay, it's not just this fluke that's going to go away. And so, you know, because if it happens suddenly too, like, you know, for me, I built a startup, ended up hiring a bunch of people, going through different rounds of funding, and eventually selling the company. And so that's a very, like, it's a, like an event that happens. And like one day, you know, it's all on paper, and then the next day it's real money that is yours. And so, you know, learning how to invest that properly and getting that set up and getting over this fear of like, you know, what if it all crashes and it goes away? And, you know, I don't want to spend money because what, you know, what might happen? And, you know, realizing that you get the strategies in place, you get the right investments made, and then, you know, then you can really spend it and have fun and, like, do what you want to do.
Yeah, so I think that for me, it was a much longer process than it seems like it was for you. I went through, I would say, 3 years of just feeling really insecure. I think partially, like, as an entrepreneur, you know, you make money in tranches, and your income is anything but reliable or stable. And some, when you're up, you're not sure if you're ever be up again. And when you're down, you think you're always like going to be down. So it was like a really paranoid couple of years. And I think I overextended myself in trying to reinvent myself and kind of overcommitting to too many projects to hopefully like really make myself secure. But really just in the last, I would say, 6 months, if I gotten to a point where I'm just like, start feeling actually financially free. And it got me kind of thinking, like, what does financial freedom mean? Because for some people, it just means like, okay, I don't have any debt. For some people, it's like, all right, I have enough money to live for the rest of my life. And then for other people, which I think is like the coolest thing, and what I sort of see in you is like, all right, I'm not just going to worry about money. Like, one thing I learned from you is when we were in Thailand on one trip, you're like, I'm like, you know, we could write this off as a business expense, this. And you're like, yeah, I could. But, you know, then at the end of every month, I got to do like reconciliation, all this shit. And I'm like, yeah, I'm spending 4 hours twice a month, like doing all this reconciliation and working my account and stuff. I'm like, that's not financial freedom.
Yeah. Well, going back to what you said in the beginning, you have your knowledge, your time and money to invest. You know, maybe you're saving money by doing that, but you're doing that at, you know, at the expense of your time. And for me, if I can afford to not have to do something unpleasant like that, I would rather spend the money.
Right. Definitely. So give us like, what's, you've been on the last like 2 or 3, 4 years, some pretty freaking awesome things, right? I mean, we went to Antarctica together.
Yeah.
I think your lifestyle as a whole, and so like the chapters that you had, where you haven't actually, you haven't been working, right? I mean, you haven't been.
No.
Yeah, you've just been enjoying, which is freaking awesome.
No.
So what, like, give us just like a rundown of what.
Oh, man.
Start from like the exit and then.
Sure. So I guess sold the company and then I was living overseas. And so then I needed to basically establish a residence in the U.S. And so had some friends in Texas. So moved there and then started thinking like, all right, it's a whole new world out there. Yeah. What are my options? What am I going to do? And just started picking all these things that I just kind of heard about, but could never had the time and money and, mm-hmm. and whatnot to go after. And so, I don't know, learn to fly an airplane, mm-hmm. learn to go scuba diving, learn to sail a boat, just all the things that were money kind of dreams yeah. that lots of people have that I'm just like, I want to see what's out there and, mm-hmm. and just kind of sample a little bit of each thing. And then I found out, I probably don't have what it takes to be a pilot. I'd rather not die in a fiery wreck, like yeah. with a lot on the table. Yeah. But I discovered I really like the ocean and really like to travel. So I learned how to sail, bought a sailboat, lived on a boat and sailed through the Caribbean for a couple of years. And that was a really good time.
That was a cool chapter, man.
That was a lot of good.
So you bought the boat. I was basically with you when you bought the boat.
Yeah.
And then you're pretty much living on that for 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, to have a big boat like that, I don't think it makes sense to have one unless you're living on it or you can pay to have someone watch it and take care of it. Mm-hmm. Cause boats just start degrading immediately.
Yeah.
After you step off them, something will break and you go back on it and you just have to spend time to fix it back up. Mm-hmm. So, and after 2 years of that too, I was ready for the land-based lifestyle for a while. I mean, living on a yacht sounds luxurious, but it's like camping. You know, you gotta keep track of your water and your electricity and, you know, go grocery shopping in a little, like, inflatable boat, and it just, you know, and there's a lot of like preparation and planning you have to do. You know, when you have a condo on the land, you lock the door and leave, like, it's done. Mm-hmm. You don't need to worry about it. There's nothing to do there. But with a boat, you know, you even if you tie up at a dock, you still have to worry about the weather, make sure everything's like done right. If you're at anchor, you know, you have to really keep an eye on the weather because if winds shift or something happens, you know, you might need to move at a moment's notice. And so it's a lifestyle that's fun, but it also carries its own responsibilities. Sure. And, you know, after 2 years of that, it was like, okay, I need less responsibilities.
But that was a cool skill to acquire because, you know, a lot of people, they retire and they just want to go sail around the world. Now you can, like, you have that skill.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you ever want to just jump back on a boat, I know we're talking about doing it in September again in Greece, but that's like, I feel like that is also a great investment. When you think about investing, like, to be able to learn a good skill like that.
Yeah, sure.
You can enjoy at any point in your life.
I mean, and with the stuff that I'm into now, like, I still love the ocean and the water and I'm really into kite surfing. And so to understand, when you learn to sail, you need to learn all about weather patterns and how wind and waves interact and mm-hmm. and why you get waves and just be able to, like, read the water, read a forecast mm-hmm. and kind of understand what that's going to mean for the conditions at sea and understanding tides and currents and just, you know, what is a safe situation, what is a dangerous situation. And so that really, you know, all the little things that you learn sailing, being very like DIY and being able mm-hmm. to fix things and learning knots and just all the stuff that goes into it yeah. just is really handy in other parts of life.
Yeah. So at what point was there the decision to get the place in Austin, your condo in Austin?
That was pretty much just as soon as I realized I needed to move back to the States.
Yes. Yeah. Just like pick a city, make it yeah. Austin. Yeah. So Zach's got like a sick condo in Austin. And earlier this year when we were going through like this big debate of, I was feeling like I need to set up a place in the U.S. Now I've set up a place in the U.S. and I hate it. I was going back and forth with Zach, like, where do we make a home base? Because Zach and I share a very similar lifestyle, right? And there wasn't really like something that stuck out as a winner. And I was like, well, maybe I'll do Austin. I was like, what do you think about Austin, Zach? And he's like, basically, it's like, it's okay, but it's so unaligned with my goals right now. And that didn't really resonate with me until I got set up in the U.S. And I'm like, I totally get it now. Like it rings in my ears. Like it's so unaligned with my goals, because my goals now are not like financially driven per se, right? They're more lifestyle based. And being like stuck in, I mean, there's some places in the U.S. that are fine, don't get me wrong, but everyone is locked into a growth mode, right? Or into a work hard type of mode where like Monday through Friday, everyone's at work. And if I'm in Tampa, like I'm not really working, it kind of sucks. And then as soon as we get like overseas and back kind of doing what we're doing, I'm like, I immediately feel better. Like I think this is more what we need to be doing. So
start running into a lot more people that are doing this kind of outside the box, independent lifestyle, whether they're digital nomads, which Sam hates that term, but
what are we?
I mean, it's, just the people who have decided, hey, I want to live a different type of life and are motivated to do that and are going after it too.
So that kind of brings us to one of the funnest parts of investing. Like, why do we invest? Because we want to make our lives happier. That often comes from having more money, more options. So when you get to that point, what do you do with your life? Like, how do you set it up to be awesome, right? So we put a post in Boss Lounge today together. We thought of some good ideas. Where, if you can have two places, because having excessive like six places is kind of crazy. But if you can only have two places in the world and you're planning on living those, having those is like, how do you set them up? Where would you set them up?
So, I don't have a final answer for this because I'm in the same, I'm going through and trying to decide that question for myself. But I put a lot of thought into it lately. And for me, I've done, I've bought a nice place somewhere and lived there for a while, and that's fun. But I kind of get the wanderlust after a while, too. And then on the flip side, I've lived out of a suitcase for, 6 months at a time, just traveling place to place. And that's a lot of fun, but it's also really, it's tough being a new person in town all the time. And, there's not always a friend of a friend or someone to kind of show you around or just meet up with. And so it's tough to be a solo traveler for a long, long period of time. And it just kind of, it grinds on you a little bit. And so what I've realized is that the way that I like to travel is kind of, I call it like home-based style, where you have a place that's your home that you can go back to and it's all set up how you like it and you have friends in the city and, you go home. But it's in a place where it's easy to go out and do the things that you enjoy doing. Right. So for me, I like kite surfing. I love the ocean. I like warm weather. I like Asia. I just really like the culture out there. Lived in China for many years and now visited a lot of countries out there. It's just a fun place.
Right.
And so
great airlines.
Yeah. Decided I wanted a place like main home base out in Asia somewhere. And so for me, I looked at, okay, where are the big, nice metropolitan cities that have a good international quality of life? Ideally, it was actually a requirement that have a like solid international airport. I can get to a lot of places, are very, expat friendly. And so looked at, for me, kind of the top five were Hong Kong, Tokyo, Bangkok, Taipei, and I guess Singapore as well. And so, just went, visited all of them. looked at real estate, looked at what it's like to live there. And I had lived in Shenzhen, China for many years. And so I was really familiar with Hong Kong, and talking with Sam and just doing more research. And for me, it came down to Bangkok being the best. It doesn't have the best airport.
It's pretty damn good.
But it gets the job done.
Yeah.
The country itself is extremely friendly for foreigners, mm-hmm. and people in kind of more of a...
privilege.
Yeah, like if you have the money to live there and support yourself, and mm-hmm. you know, they're more than happy to have you. And you know, looking at things like value for your money for getting property. I mean, in Hong Kong, I was looking at, you know, just getting like a studio apartment somewhere nice, and versus in Hong Kong getting like a giant 3-bedroom, like massive condo right in the city center. And so for me, that was pretty much a no brainer. And then also looking at weather, you know, I like warm, really not a fan of being cold. So winters in Tokyo are not a thing I want to do. It was close for me, actually, between Bangkok and Taipei. Having lived in China and really loving that culture and learning the language and just being comfortable operating in like a Mandarin-based environment, Taipei is awesome, but it has a very kind of, I don't know, Seattle-like climate, where in the winter it's just gray and rainy and... it's just chilly for months on end, which is a shame because during that time period, Taiwan is basically the best place to kite surf in Asia. Don't tell anybody, though, because it's a secret. And I'll be really mad if people start going out there. So, but Bangkok, you know, is so close mm-hmm. that it's easy just to hang out and be warm in Bangkok. And then when the wind forecast says, hey, there's 5 days coming up of 30 knot winds, just book a flight, head out to Taiwan for 5 days. And, you know, then when the wind dies down, you know, go back home and kick back and start planning the next trip.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of good places to travel to in Asia for kitesurfing. You have Vietnam, you have the Philippines, you have Japan, you have China. Right. Just there's so many spots you could go to. And, you know, Bangkok is nice and central to all of them. So
you got the nice place in Bangkok, you got the penthouse in Austin. You're going to get rid of that.
Yeah. I mean, Austin, I guess this is the other thing too, that kind of goes into this is, you know, a lot of people think about where to live that, you know, they look at, all right, what is the income tax in this mm-hmm. place? And I also like primarily with like U.S. citizens, you know, where you have the dual federal state tax, mm-hmm. they look at state tax and say, okay, well, what state has the lowest tax? But, you know, if you're investing in such a way that, you know, you're kind of like tax efficient, where you're not generating a lot of like yearly taxable income, but you buy a place that's expensive, mm-hmm. you know, you're getting nailed for taxes and fees and stuff on that place every year. And so, you know, Texas, like living in Austin is, you kind of get hammered on taxes on a nice place. Whereas place like, Thailand, there's zero property taxes.
Yeah.
You know, if you buy or sell a place, you have to pay taxes, but once you own it, there's no yearly like fee for that. You just pay like your HOA fees essentially, and which are nothing. Tend to be pretty minimal in Thailand, and
happy to pay.
So kind of the carrying cost on that is pretty low. So
so once you get rid of the place in Austin, you're going to pick up a second place, basically try to maintain two bases.
I mean, the other thing too is, I guess somewhere, most, you know, everywhere in the world is seasonal, mm-hmm. more or less. So there's a nice time to be there and there's not so nice time to be there. So think, all right, have a base in Bangkok. Well, summertime there, it gets pretty hot and it's I'm not going to say miserable, but it makes it tough when you step out the door and you're just sweating immediately. And so start looking around at like where are places that would be fun to be in those months where you don't want to be, you know, in Bangkok. And so I haven't quite figured that one out yet. One of the things I'm thinking is that I do love the kind of metropolitan setup where, you know, whatever you want is there, like good food, entertainment, lots of people, and thinking I really enjoy being able to just hop in the car and drive 10 minutes and go kite surf. Mm-hmm. So trying to find like, okay, where would be a place that I could go to easily and just have that right in my backyard. And so just trying to consider like where those places would be. So whether that's Japan, Europe, you know, maybe Hawaii, I don't know. I need to do more research.
I look forward to hearing about it. So just kind of in summary, like right now, like what's your kind of philosophy for, we know what you like to do in life. Do you think about like investing or finance at all anymore? Like you have enough that you don't need to necessarily worry about it. Do you have any goals with it, or is it just to keep it simple and kind of enjoy life and not try to grow it, just spend it down in a sense?
Definitely not just letting it go and hope for the best. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't say I spend a ton of time thinking about it, but, you know, I think it's important to stay up to date, understand what's happening in the world, in the markets, and with technology, and just what direction the world's heading. I don't have an obsession with growing the number on the statement. I think that makes me a little bit different from a lot of people that meet a lot of people who are like serial entrepreneurs, right? And it's like, dude, you have enough money, you could just go do whatever you want, and why are you so stressed about this thing or that thing?
That's me.
But hey, you know, a lot of people have different goals in life. So for me, I did what I wanted to in the business world. Honestly, I enjoyed building technology, but all the garbage that's around doing that, like VCs and business partners that betray you, and just all that stuff, like not enjoyable. So
right,
it's just not what I'm interested in. And you know, I have different projects that I work on that are around my interests, and you know, it's nice to be able to just build something and put it out there for free.
Sure.
And if people like it, you know, that's kind of cool, but at the end of the day, just something that you want to see, that you want to build, and so you do.
Yeah, there's tons of VCs and, you know, and angel investors of all sorts that they won't back successful entrepreneurs, because doing it a second time in many cases is so much harder than doing it the first time, because once you've been through it, you know how painful it is to like deal with all that stuff that you just talked about. It's a lot easier to give up. And so a lot of people won't invest people that have been successful in the past, because there's that same drive and that there isn't the ignorance that they had when they went into it, like, oh, it's gonna be all kittens and roses and money.
Sure.
It's been interesting, but dude, very inspiring guy.
Thank you.
I've learned a lot from you over the last few years, just watching you enjoy life, enjoy the success, and hopefully some fantastic times ahead, starting with some kite surfing tomorrow.
Yeah.
So we'll finish these beers. We'll go check out the streets of, where are we?
Riohacha.
Riohacha on the North Coast. If anyone wants to check it out, we'll update you with how it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all I got to say. So catch you guys later. Johnny and I will catch up in a second with some of our own discussions.
Sounds like you and Zach have been having a great time, and I want everyone, before we jump into the outro, I want you guys to think for a second what you would do if you were in that position, and actually, how much do you have now, and where do you want to get to in the next year? So this is a great time to talk about our new sponsor, Personal Capital, which is a super easy to use tool where you basically just set it up and it automatically, you know, updates your current net worth. So it calculates how much debt you have, calculates all your investments are doing across all dashboards, whether it's Vanguard or Pier Street or Wealthfront. and even calculates how much debt you have on your credit cards. You can even manually put in things like your Bitcoin or, you know, whatever else you have. Really, really cool. Highly encourage everyone to sign up for it. It is investlikeaboss.com/personal if you want to give us credit for you signing up. And even better, it is absolutely free. I just signed up and I just turned Sam on to it. So I'm sure in a future episode, we will do a full review. But if you guys want to follow along, go to investlikeaboss.com/personal.
And now onto the perfect life. Johnny, can we daydream together?
I don't think we have to. I think we are living the perfect life. And it's one of those things where it depends on how you define it, because I'm not waking up at the Four Seasons with champagne and, you know, brunch every day, because I would get bored of that. And it might be the perfect life for a weekend or maybe a week if you're really stressed from your old life. But I don't think that's your perfect life either, is it?
No. And we were talking about this. Everything's in balance. And I just set up the place in Tampa, and it has not been, you know, for a while I was regretting it. But then when I came down here, I was like, this trip was so much better because it was in balance with more of my life now versus just doing it all year round and being like trip to trip to trip to trip. Now I have a home base. It's, you know, the day to day in Tampa is not anything to write home about or have a podcast about, but it makes the anticipation of an upcoming trip so much better. And then actually doing that trip so much better. Whereas the last few years, I was just constantly doing cool things and I started to lose a little bit of the enjoyment for it. So I think keeping things in balance is the way to go.
I absolutely agree. Cause you know, when you're, you know, in a position where you're traveling, you know, back to back, first you're tired, you're, you know, freaking exhausted from living out of a suitcase. Mm-hmm. And second, you don't really have time to reflect at what you've done, and you don't really have time to get excited for what you have planned in the future. So you're kind of just, everything's kind of just a big blur, and it actually kind of sucks, to be honest.
Absolutely. And I'll just give you guys another quick example on this trip where we went up to the very, very north coast of Colombia. We ended up in this place called Cape de Vela, which was after the recording with Zach and I. And we ended up, it was the craziest place I've ever been. There was no fresh water. They ran out of bottled water while we were there. So one day we had to drink. The only thing we could drink was Coca-Cola and beer. There was, you know, you can't flush a toilet. Thank God there was no mosquitoes because it was in this actual desert area of Colombia, which is odd. If you look at a map, it looks like all of Colombia is a jungle, but the very, very north coast has a sliver that's just a desert. And Zach and I were sharing a room that cost $7 a night total, you know, beds. And the wind, because it's a kite surfing destination, wind is constantly blowing. And sand is just constantly blowing through the windows all night. So you wake up and you're literally just covered in sands, you know, and then there's roosters and stuff crowing at 3 a.m. So you don't sleep. You don't shower. You walk around in a bathing suit all day. There's, you know, no one's wearing like any type of proper clothes, but it was a surreal experience, right? Like going there and kite surfing, drinking 50-cent beers. And now we're back in, going to be in Cartagena tomorrow night, staying at the Intercontinental. It's like a $300 a night, really pimp resort. And that experience is only going to be that much better because we just came from a place where we couldn't shower for 3 days, right?
I actually remember getting that text message from you when we were trying to record this this intro outro a few days ago. And you were like, you know, I'm sorry, buddy. Like, I have no internet and I haven't showered in 3 days.
I was not feeling good at life. And I was horrible at kite surfing. I was like, anyone that knows kite surfing, I did the, like the fatal flaw of kite surfing, which is torpedoing a kite. And I broke the kite, which I felt horrible about. The instructors were really bummed. I mean, I paid for it to be fixed, but it was kind of an ego confidence shock. So it was. But man, I'll tell you what, it's one of those trips. Like once you get done with it, you're like, that was just so worthwhile. So glad we did it. Glad to get back to the U.S. And you know, I think it's cool to see like, you know, the type of balance that you can have in a trip when you go from like extremely poor places and you rough it, and then you can go and, you know, class it up for a little bit. And I think that's also true about life. Like sometimes you got to fly economy class, even if you can afford business class your whole life, just to to keep it all in perspective and appreciate the finer things in life.
Well, you know, that's a big hack that I've learned from you, where once I started flying business class, I thought I would never go back to economy. Or once I started staying in nicer hotels or Airbnbs, I was like, I'm never going to go back to staying in a dorm or a cheap guest house. But what you had said, when I asked you, like, why do you take the bus sometimes? And it's for that polarity, so you can enjoy the good stuff again instead of just expecting it and getting upset. And I'm happy that we postponed this recording till today, because now I'm in a really nice Airbnb right in the center of Plovdiv, and it's super comfortable. But for the last 3 days, I've been in a $10 a night dorm, and it sucked.
Right. Well, why'd you do that?
Well, first, why did you guys share a $7 accommodation? Why didn't you guys get two separate ones?
There wasn't anything. So the only option, believe it or not, was you can sleep in a hammock outside, or there was this little, there was this room. It's not even a room, Johnny. Like, it's open to the outside, but it had a bed, and it was sort of protected from the sand. Like, if you're in the hammock, you just get blasted by sand all day, all night. This was like sort of protected, although it's like raining sand on you the whole time. I mean, this place is almost indescribable, but because it was like that, the people that were there were just so chill and mellowed out. And, it was a really cool place at the end of the day. I'll send you some photos of like the actual trip to get there. I mean, it's no man's land, bro. You do not want to be on these roads, like, because you're not sure if the narcos are going to come. You're not sure if you're driving over someone's private property. No one could believe that we drove out there. Like, the only way people get here is basically from like Cartagena, running like a big, a big proper tour company to take them out in a 4x4. We just rented a car and we're like, screw it, figure it out with Google Maps.
You guys are insane, but I'm glad you guys made it. I'm sure that was part of the adventure as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So the reason why I stayed in a dorm is I was meeting up, a couple friends that I met on the Nomad Cruise, and I was in Banksco, and, all of them were coming. They're sharing a room, with each other. And there's actually really nice Airbnbs in Plovdiv for pretty cheap, as cheap as $25 a night. The one I'm in is 40, but I'm like a block away from the main mm-hmm. walking street in the center. And I thought about, getting a nice place, but I thought, you know what? I'm not going to know anyone here. I'm traveling by myself. I don't need like a nice place. Let me just get a dorm. Maybe I'll meet some cool people. And that way I won't feel bad that I have this really nice apartment in Banksco that's just sitting empty. And I was like, it's only 3 days. I think what I'm going to do from now on is, unless it's a really nice dorm or a private room in a dorm, I'm going to limit my dorm stays to two nights, because by that third day, I'm like tired of sharing a bathroom. I'm tired of being woken up at night and, just people coming in and out and talking. So, but I think I'm going to continue doing this at least for the next couple of years. I have a hard cutoff when, like, I don't want to be, the guy that's in his 40s staying in a dorm. So yeah. I figure I have to enjoy it now while I still look, like I could be like late 20s.
I'll tell you, man, I don't stay in dorms as much as I used to, mostly because I have a lot more trouble sleeping, but I have had some of the best days, nights of my life staying in dorms. I've also had some of the worst, but I'd say I've had better experience than worse. So any listeners out there that have never stayed in, in hostels, even if you're in, your mid-30s, I'd still highly recommend it. You can even get private rooms in hostels in most places, but you'll meet some great people, especially when you go into a little bit far off places like where Johnny is or where I am in Northern Colombia. If you go to Paris, you're going to meet the, kind of gap year type people. But if you go to interesting places, third world countries, stay in hostels, you're going to meet some people with a little bit of edge, a little bit of a interesting story to them. So give it a shot.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
One funny thing is, I think on the same day, we both didn't have water. Because some reason, my hostel, just the water shut off for a day. And they said they were going to have it back on in a few hours. And they didn't until like noon the next morning. So an entire day, we couldn't shower. We couldn't like wash dishes. We couldn't flush the toilet.
Yeah.
We had to brush our teeth just using jugs of water. And the next morning, waking up, having it be exactly the same, it was terrible. I was really tempted just to check out and you know get an Airbnb right away. But luckily the water came back on.
Yeah, that was similar to what happened to us. Like there was day two and we're waiting for a delivery of water so that we could have fresh water to shower with. And the delivery never came. And the night before we got pretty drunk. So I was like, all right, let's stock up on water. And of course we're in a desert. So we end up drinking water all through the night. Wake up. I'm like, dude, I can't do this. I need a shower. Like I'm just covered in sand and dried out, covered in salt. And I go to the place to buy water and they're like, no, we're sold out. I'm like, you have got to be kidding me, right? And then like all the dogs in town are kind of like looking at me and because the people give the little stray dogs water and stuff. And I'm like, pero, I got no tango, lo siento. I'm like, I don't even have water. But it's a peculiar situation up there, but they get by. They live.
But what's cool is now we both appreciate having water so much more. It's like one of those things where if you're just living at your apartment or your house in Tampa or wherever you guys are from, you kind of just expect there to be running water. You expect there to be bottled water delivered or, the store. And then if they don't have it, you get angry, upset. Versus for us, every time I see water now or take a shower for the last couple of days, I've been excited.
Yeah. Good stuff, bro. So I just want to catch up with you quick on what financial freedom means and kind of try to stimulate the listeners to think about this because, assumably, Zach, yourself, and me are all at different wealth levels. We'd all consider ourselves financially free. And that, like I said in the episode, that definition has changed a lot for me recently. And I think it changes for people as they go through life and maybe they get out of debt. They start having some savings, what the goals around financial freedom are, and what the definition is. So I wanted to see, what your definition of financial freedom is and what your future goals might be.
So my definition of financial freedom is to be able to enjoy life. And in a way where right now it's, staying in cheap places, sometimes, because I actually like good values and I don't mind it, but having the option to stay at a nice place when I feel like it. So for example, staying in the dorm the last couple of days, because I figured, hey, why not save some money? But then being able to check into a nice Airbnb, because I have a friend visiting this weekend and, I wanted a nicer place, or just because I got tired of the hostel. Same thing with my apartments where, sometimes I'll rent like the, one of the cheaper options I can find, for my monthly rental. And sometimes I just feel like having a nice place and saying, let me splurge a bit. Let me just, go over budget. And I think right now at wherever I am, especially being able to do this, not only in Chiang Mai, but also being able to do that in Europe, I'm okay with that because I actually think that this is giving me as much happiness as I need. I don't need to stay at a Four Seasons every night of the year. And I actually don't think that'll make me happy, but I would like to be able to stay there for a weekend once a year on a special occasion and be able to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it.
What about you, buddy?
Well, I guess I'll give kind of two different times in my life just for almost as like a thought experiment with the listeners. So where I'm at now is totally contrary to where I was in 2013. So 2013, we hadn't sold the company yet. I was still taking a $1,500 salary, so I had basically no savings, but I did have a company credit card, which I pretty much lived off of. And I also had grown a fairly good network of high wealth individuals that I was hanging out with. So I was always, I was always around cool things, cool events, staying at nice places that, maybe they lent to me or took me on trips. But I never thought about money at all because I didn't have any, but also I didn't have any paperwork or around it. I would just swipe a company credit card every time I wanted to eat, every time I wanted to fly, stay in a hotel. I mean, my life was on the business. It was a really, really cool, stress-free time, at least financially, which seems kind of crazy because if the company had failed, I would have basically had nothing. But it was a really, really good time in my life. And then there's kind of contrary to that now, which I would say I've secured financial independence, meaning that I could just kind of shut down everything and coast through life, maintaining my lifestyle and not have to worry about running out. But I wouldn't consider that financially free, because now my life and my day is consumed. I mean, all day I'm thinking about investing. I'm thinking about finance. I'm thinking about income. I'm thinking about these things. I have a lot of bookkeeping, a lot of tax paperwork. So it's just a different position to be in. But I think like what I would like to be able to achieve of it is to be able to get to a point where you don't really think about your investments anymore, right? So it's been 3 years of really trying to understand investing, trying to control them, trying to maintain a lot of oversight on them. But it starts consuming you a little bit. And when you think about money all day, then you start worrying about money all day naturally, right? So I think getting to a point, hopefully in the next couple of years, where I invest because it's fun. I still love doing angel investing because it's just a joy to be around startups and smart, young, motivated entrepreneurs. But other than that, I don't really think about it. I think more about hobbies or more about maybe charity or spending quality time with friends and family. But I'm not thinking about this stuff more than maybe 30 minutes a day, right? Whereas now I'm probably more in the 5-6 hours a day type of thing. So I think that's where it becomes for me. And maybe depending on how much money you have, problems or thoughts around money are less or more. You know, if you have $1 billion, that can be a hell of a lot of headaches and a lot of paperwork if you don't know how to manage it or you don't have good people on your team, right? So I think as you go up the wealth ladder, then things shift and you have to reorganize things to be a little bit more efficient and make sure that you control your money and your money doesn't control you.
You know, I bet you a lot of people who aren't in the situation of having a lot of money yet might be listening to you and be like, man, like, what are you talking about? If I had even $1 million, I would never stress about money. It would, you know, I would just enjoy life. But, you know, they hear that, they're like, why? Like, why do you care? Right. And I think, but I put myself in your shoes and I'm like, you know what? It's stressful to see your money only go down and not go up. And, you know, knowing that there's probably not going to be another big windfall anytime soon, you know, that could be the one, you know, big business exit that you have your whole life. And it's stressful, especially if you're around, you know, people who have hundreds of millions of dollars, or your friends who, you know, have these, you know, even bigger exits, and you're trying to keep up with their lifestyles, or you're trying to see, hey, like, I want to have, you know, be able to, you know, buy a jet, or I want to be able to do this.
Yeah.
And not be able to do it. And I really think it's all about perspective, where,
sure,
you know, if the best thing that has come from our friendship is me seeing that by me having, you know, by me becoming a millionaire is not going to necessarily make me happier by itself. And that if anything, it just, you know, it just makes you more stressed unless you manage it correctly.
Well, Mark Cuban said, if you're already happy, $1 billion can make you a hell of a lot more happy.
Yeah.
But if you're not happy, it's probably not going to change anything. In fact, it can really expedite a lot of your issues and worries. And I think that's really true. But there's something to be said that America, the USA, is the richest country in the world by a long shot. But it's also, what's the number one prescribed drug in the USA? Xanax, yeah. Right? There's something to be said for that. That's partially cultural thing. But, you know, I asked this to this other guy that is a very, very successful guy. And, he, you know, he's gone through 3 divorces and he's just never happy. And he's like, all of my friends are basically addicted to antidepressants and anxiety pills, and all of his friends are wealthy, because you get into these bad situations when you don't manage your life well, and you know you come into money and then you make bad decisions, you become a degenerate and you fly off around partying and being unfaithful to your wife, et cetera, right? So you can create a lot of problems with money, but you can also create an incredible, incredible life if you take it and manage it well. So these are just really important things for people to think about that are in that hustle, that are working so hard to create more wealth. It's just important things to think about. What will you do? How will you structure your life once you get to that point? And how will you make sure that you build a great life and not cause yourself more problems? But I mean, Johnny, on your point, right? You said no one likes to see their money go down. Last episode, we said money right now, we can't. Right now, GDP is the biggest indicator, right? Money is the biggest indicator. So if you look at your own personal wealth, as I'm sure a lot of listeners do, it's almost like your stock price. It's like your personal stock price. When your wealth is going up, you feel like your stock value and your value in the world is going up. And when it's going down, I don't care if you have $50 in the bank or $500 million. It doesn't feel good. it just doesn't feel good. So,
well, that's actually one thing I really liked about Zach is the fact that he's okay with his money going down. And right. I think, you know, it could be because he doesn't have, you know, $500,000 and, you know, he's seeing it dwindle down, to, you know, closer to zero. If he has a couple hundred million, you know, maybe in his mind, he's like,
I'm not saying he's have that type of money.
Okay.
Let's not put a number on it.
Okay.
His company sold for a lot of money, but I don't want to speculate on what type of coin he's got, and neither I'm sure he didn't want to either on this episode. But
Yes,
he definitely doesn't need to worry about.
So let me ask you this, Sam: at what number would you have to have in your net worth for you to never worry about it going down? Like, what number is at a point where you're like, you know what, I'm never going to spend all this, so it's fine if it goes down.
Well, I don't think I could. I don't think I would now, unless I make some big mistake or there's some huge, you know, hyperinflation scenario in the U.S. But I would say like this: there's a number out there that I think you can really start running your life like a corporation, where you basically have a team of people. It's like almost like family office, but maybe you also have a personal assistant, etc. And just like a few good people around you all the time. And I don't know. I think I don't want to put a number on it, but it's probably like, I don't know. I don't want to put a number on it, man.
Well, okay.
But,
so let me ask you this. Okay.
Like this. MJ DeMarco's number was like 12 million, right?
Yeah.
He's like, once you do that, you can basically live tax free off municipal bonds for the rest of your life and spend $400,000 or $500,000, right? So there's nothing wrong with that number. Other people might say it's $3-4 million, and in other people you can live happy off $1 million. If you're gonna live a lifestyle like you're living, Johnny, $1 million is gonna maintain that lifestyle for a very long time without burning the principal down. So I just would like, there's a few financial goals ahead of me that I would like to get to. I'm putting a little bit less priority on them now, but I think if you get to that number, then you can start running your life more like a corporation. You have a full-time PA, you have a financial manager that's basically full-time and can go out and scour angel investments and, you know, and maybe someone to kind of manage your property and stuff like that. You know, something like that I think would be a really cool level to get to. And then you can kind of just turn off your brain and start working on whatever you want to do.
You know, one funny thing that you had mentioned a little bit earlier is, you know, having to think about finances and investments all the time. And I realized that I'm like looking at, you know, at deals. I'm in the boss lounge. I'm, you know, checking out where I can put my money, but I'm never stressed about it. I'm always kind of just thinking, I think of it as like a kind of a combination between a video game and me like going, you know, shopping for stuff I like browsing Amazon or, you know, walking through the store and be like, oh, should I buy this? Should I buy this? And just kind of getting, you know, excited about things I could buy. And actually I bought two investments, this week. We'll probably talk about them on the next, quarterly update, but you know, spending 15 grand on investments to me is a lot more exciting than spending 15 grand on, you know, really anything else like fancy toys, you know, VR headsets or even a car.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. Because you're investing in yourself and you can always take that money out and buy a VR headset later, right? But you can let it grow in the meantime. And also because your life is so free and flexible, at least in terms of material things, that adding any of that stuff is just going to bog you down and not allow you to do the things that you want to be able to do, like hang out in Bulgaria all summer.
Yeah. So speaking of things tying us down, you mentioned in the boss lounge last week that you're looking at buying a new car. Is that something you're still thinking about?
Yeah. You get sucked into this consumerism in the US and you just feel like you have to do more and more and more. And right now in Tampa, I'm driving around in a Hyundai and no girls are looking at me. So, no, I mean, I've always wanted to have like a sports car, and I think like a super sports car. And I think that window is not necessarily closing, but I think it might be closing in the next decade, as things might move towards becoming autonomous, or let's just say there's, you know, speed traps everywhere around the U.S. that are automated and you can't really go out and just cut loose, or you have to take your car to like a speed track in order to really enjoy it. So I think like getting a sports car now, just go ahead and doing it, is probably a good time in my life while I got the place in Tampa. So I'm looking at actually there's this thing called swap a lease where you can rent cars that are someone's, it's like someone's lease that you take over their lease, and it actually works out really, really well for high-end cars and short-term rentals, because let's say you want that McLaren F60, which there are currently two of them on swap a lease. you don't have to put the down payment down. You don't have to take a 48-month lease on it. You can go and just take over a lease for 16 months and pay that monthly, you know, let's say if the McLaren F60 is $3,800 a month, you can pay that for 16 months and wipe your hands and be done with it. You don't have to worry about anything else. So I think that's probably the smartest way to do it, because I know owning a car like that will be massive headaches, like a lot more, just a lot more of everything. But if I can just do it for 16 months, have that chapter in my life and be done, I think that's a pretty cool way to go about it.
You know, that's actually a pretty prudent move that you have, because it would be like a huge part of the lease is that upfront down payment, or that upfront payment. Actually, I'm curious, on swap lease, does it tell you how much they put down, like, in the first place?
Or I'm new to it, right? So yeah. You only get certain details. I just paid, in order to actually contact the like leasers, you have to pay like $60. So I just did that, and then I've been in Colombia, so I haven't been active on it. But I'll let you guys know the details as soon as I figure it out. And then Bryce, who we've had on the podcast before, sent a link. I think it's in Boss Lounge. You can also get a brand new lease, Aston Martin DB11, which is a badass car. Mm-hmm. And that's only like, it seemed really reasonable. It was like $2,200 a month, which I know is a lot of money, but for that car. But the problem is then you're locked into a 3-4 year lease, and how long are we going to be in the USA? I have no idea. I might not be here in 3 months. So at least 16 months I can sort of justify and make an excuse.
Pretty sure that if we go back in the archives, and you listeners who have listened to all these episodes before Sam moved to Florida, I was like 2 months, 3 months tops, he's going to be out of there.
I might not even leave Colombia. I might just stay down here for a bit, pure vida, baby. So Johnny, give me your, like, we did this interesting poll in Boss Lounge about, you have two houses, and this is a good thought experiment. I'm sure everyone's tried to answer this to, you know, in conversation before at some point in their life. You have two homes anywhere in the world. You get to choose, but these are going to be your homes for the rest of your life. So you have to give a little – people just want a snap decision, like, okay, I'm going to do Florida and Thailand. Well, when you're 70 years old, that's not as realistic. You might want to do like some place that you can drive to, right? 3 hours away, 8 hours away, and you can just use them both. So what's realistic for you? And if you had to choose today, two places anywhere in the world, where are your places?
Florida and Thailand. No. So if money wasn't an issue, it would be California, probably San Diego and Hawaii. It's an easy flight. It's, you know, good weather year round. It's in the US, so it's convenient. It's just like a really nice place. But the reason why I probably want to do it, unless I had, you know, a net worth of 10, 20 million plus or something, is because, you know, first off, the state income tax in both California and Hawaii are insane. Cost of living are so high. And to me, there's equally, you know, nice places in other places of the world. So I honestly think that, you know, as much as we kind of joke about it, Chiang Mai is somewhere I can really see myself going to every year for at least 3 months. You know, I think I'll probably actually just look at some condos the next time I'm back. Just to have a place, you know, that, especially if I can rent it out when I'm gone and have that be, kind of an asset that isn't going to cost me too much money. And I really, really like Europe in the summers. I mean, it's an amazing place where I can see myself coming here every single summer for, you know, 3 to 5 months or something. You know, as cheap as property is in Bulgaria, I don't know if I want to come here every year. Mm-hmm. So I don't know where in Europe, you know, and if anything, one of those nice things about Europe is just changing it up and just seeing a new part of it. So if I had to, if I had to make a decision right now, I would say, you know, I want the option, and this is financial freedom to me, is I want the option to be able to Airbnb, you know, nice places in the city center for a month at a time, spend 3 months or 4 months in Europe every summer, and spend, you know, the rest of the year in a home base in Chiang Mai or in San Diego or in, you know, wherever that might be, and just enjoy life.
Pura Vida, baby. Pura Vida.
What about you, buddy? Tampa?
Well, there's a good chime to Tampa, Thailand. And then I was like, well, if I throw in a third, I can do Tampa, Tahoe, Thailand. That'd be nice. But I kind of look at this like, I think the Mark Faber situation, if I could be reborn again, I think Switzerland, Thailand, or, you know, Switzerland, Hong Kong is probably the best if I was just reborn again and I had maybe family there. But when I look at everything from a practical level, like my parents are in South Carolina, my sister's in California. If I have kids one day, like kind of try to take those things into consideration. I think doing Florida, Barcelona would be pretty epic. Like Spain in the summer, Spain all year round is incredible. I think Spain's one of my top three favorite countries probably. So spending time there each summer and then be able to, you know, travel Europe using that as a base would be awesome. And then like same thing, man, if I was just so wealthy that I didn't care about paying the state income tax, I probably could swing like California, Thailand, or California, Hawaii, but it just stings too much for me right now. It's more like just an intolerable thing having grown up in Florida where you pay no state income tax. But here's realistically what's probably going to happen. I'll probably do something boring like Florida, like South Carolina, because I have family around here. I have a lot of friends in Florida, and you can drive there in 8 hours. So you can do it every single month, and enjoy a nice variety of life through there. So we'll see, man. We'll see. I'm not making that decision right now, but it's been interesting to see everyone's thoughts in the Boss Lounge. There's just, and I think a really important point is, hey, man, there's so many nice ways to live a life, and there's so many nice ways to set up your lifestyle, no matter where you're from, where you need to be year round. You know, people in Tampa, they have a place in Tampa downtown, and then they have a place at the beach, and it's 45 minutes away, and they go there, you know, Thursday through Saturday or Thursday through Sunday, and they love life. So you don't have to travel across the world. You don't have to be from the US or Asia or Europe or, you know, to have an amazing life set up. You just got to do something that works for you.
Yeah, I like it. And just to kind of sum it all up, I think the financial freedom, you know, in 2018 and going forward is really different than what it was in our parents' generation, where things like Airbnb weren't possible. So now we have even like a higher level of freedom where we can enjoy the comforts of having a house everywhere in the world as long as we can afford it. So I think having the money to be able to take advantage of that freedom is what it's all about. For me, it started, you know, I can sum up financial freedom for me in one word, and it was guacamole.
Yeah.
It was one of those things where I knew I liked, you know, getting a side of guac. I knew it's good for me, and I knew it would make my food taste better. And I just wanted to be at a point where I didn't have to look at the price and be like, I don't know if I want to pay the extra, you know, $6 for the side of guac, $4, or sometimes $13. I want to just be able to get it and order it without worrying about the money. And very happy to report, I'm at guacamole level.
It's high.
I think the next, you know, the next level is going to be, you know, maybe, you know, sports car level where I can, you know, I can get that $3,000 a month lease. What about you? If you had to sum up financial freedom in one word, what was it? What is it now? Or what is it in the future?
Oh, it's got to be getting to a place in life where you don't worry about counting beans, and you're not looking at bank statements, and you're not thinking about your wealth level as your value in life. So if it dips and it goes down, it's pura vida, and if it goes up, it's pura vida. But you just smile all the time, no matter, you know, no matter what you get hit with, as long as you are comfortable knowing that you have plan B's. That's originally why I bought the places in Chiang Mai. I bought, like, as soon as we had the exit, I actually started buying one before we had the exit in the anticipation that we're going to have the exit. I set up my plan B, and that was, I bought three places in Chiang Mai. I said, if shit hits the fan and I screw this up and lose everything, or the world turns upside down, I have three places in Chiang Mai. I can move my parents into one. I can move myself and, you know, hopefully a girlfriend into the other. And then I can rent the other one. And, you know, we're not going to be wealthy, but we're going to get by and have a nice life. They grow plenty of rice and stuff up there. And that's how that whole thing started for me. So having you get yourself a plan B, and then getting to a place in life where you don't think and worry about money at, and that's at all wealth levels. So it's not starting off, and it's not being Elon Musk either. It's everywhere in between. And just for the listeners, I think an important point to remember is, again, when we talk about investing, most traditionally we're talking about investing using money and capital, but you have other weapons. You have knowledge, you have time, and most people make it investing knowledge and time. So think about, what are you investing? What do you have to invest? You have time, knowledge, and capital, and how are you putting those to work towards your goals? So something for everyone to kind of think about as we summarize this episode.
Yeah, definitely. And if you guys want to know kind of more about investing your time and your knowledge, go back to episode 23. It's entitled From Zero to Self-Made, How to 300x Your Returns. And that's about, you know, how we, you know, used money and knowledge to, you know, basically create wealth when we didn't have any money. So that was great, Sam. Really, really enjoyed this episode. Shout out to Zach. Thanks for coming on. I hope you guys enjoy Columbia. Enjoy, you know, some of what it has to offer on my behalf. And hasta luego, I guess.
Pura vida, baby. See you guys next week.
See you guys next week. Ciao, ciao. Thanks for listening to the Best Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.
Oh, hello. Meet Optima Health, your friend for Medicaid coverage. Like any true friend, we can help make life a little easier with discounts on healthy food and gift cards for pregnancy and child checkups. We include vision and medical help 24/7. See more benefits at OptimaMedicaid.com/hello. It's time to say hello to Optima Health, a health plan you can count on.